Argument is Gill versus Gonzalez. Mr. Robin.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Thomas Robin. I represent Edwin Gill with regard to his petition for review of an order by the Board of Immigration Appeals ordering him removed from the United States. Mr. Gill is a lawful permanent resident of the United States. He is a native and a citizen of India. And he had pled guilty and was convicted of residential entry in Johnson County, Indiana, and was subsequently charged by the Department of Homeland Security with having committed an aggravated felony under the Immigration and Nationality Act, a crime of violence as defined at 18 U.S.C. Section 16. Mr. Gill's case was heard by the immigration court in Chicago, and the case was terminated. The immigration judge found that there was not sufficient evidence to indicate that a crime or an actually violent crime had been committed.
Do we have to overrule a six-week-old case to agree with you?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe you do, or at least distinguish it from this case.
It's not distinguishable, is it?
I believe it is distinguishable, Your Honor. The case that you're referring to, I believe, is U.S. v. Gardner. Mm-hmm. I received a copy of that case on Friday last week. My review of it indicates that the case was primarily an analysis of sentence enhancement guidelines, which are distinguishable from 18 U.S.C. Section 6.
But, of course, Gardner relied on Section 16B. It used the Section 16B approach to analyze the Indiana statute.
That's true. And as I mentioned, I believe
that... And here we are under Section 16B again.
You are correct. However, the Gardner Court did rely in part on two other cases from the Tenth and Fifth Circuits, which I believe are distinguishable from this case, in that the statutes that were involved, both Colorado statutes, are distinguishable from the Indiana residential entry statute.
What is required for breaking an entry under this Indiana statute?
In Indiana, it is essentially a simple common law offense, the knowing or intentional.
I'm not asking you that. I'm asking, what does breaking and entering mean in the statute?
In the statute? Breaking is simply the use of any force, no matter how small, to obtain entry.
What does that mean? Suppose you turn the knob on a door.
That is a breaking, Your Honor.
Is that breaking?
Even
a whisper. It's unlocked, and you just turned it and push.
That is correct. Under the common law and under Indiana law, even the slightest force can be considered sufficient to commit a breaking. However, I think that to proceed further, an entry can also be accomplished by any insertion of the actor's body into the premises in question. And at that point, under Indiana law, the act
if
is complete.
If the door were open and he walked in, that couldn't be breaking.
No, it would not. And hence it would not be punishable under the Indiana statute.
Right. But you're saying if you turn the knob and push it, that is breaking and entering. Is that what you're saying?
If you turn the knob, push it, and enter the premises
right,
with
yeah,
some part
yeah,
of your body, it's
right.
breaking and entering. Yes. Our disagreement, by the way, with the Board of Immigration Appeals
so
is
now,
that...
What if you think it's your house, it's dark or something, and you turn the knob and you enter, and you immediately realize it's not your house, so you leave. Now, would that be a violation of the statute?
Yes, as it has been analyzed by the Board of Immigration Appeals, and also under Gardner, any of these offenses would constitute a crime of violence under 18 U.S.C. 16B. And we believe that sweeps far too wide. The court, both the BIA and the Gardner Court, have not taken into consideration acts, as you have just described, Your Honor, of mistake, bad judgment, even recklessness. Perhaps an overzealous salesman puts his foot in the door. Maybe a young woman comes home to her ex-lover's home to gather some mail or personal belongings. Either of those, under this current analysis by both the BIA and Gardner, would be considered to have committed crimes of violence. We believe that sweeps too wide. This statute is divisible in that it represents actions which could be and could not be effectively crimes of violence under the law. And it is that analysis that we believe should have been engaged by the BIA, which was done by the immigration judge in this case, and the judge simply held that the Department of Homeland Security had not met its burden. There were no documents presented to the court with regard to the record of conviction other than the information and the record of the judgment of conviction, excuse me, itself. And absent anything further, there is simply nothing on the record to indicate the nature of this crime. The information and the judgment of conviction both merely reflect the statutory language of the residential entry statute. I was just going to simply say that the appropriate analysis here is to refer to the information or the indictment, and under certain circumstances where there is not sufficient or are not sufficient indicia to make a determination, even some other records from the record of conviction can be reviewed. But all of this must be taken in consideration with regard to 18 U.S.C. 16b. The only aspect of 16b that we will acknowledge is that petitioner here was guilty of having committed a felony. The nature of the offense is not inherently violent. I think from the court's own commentary a moment ago, there are circumstances that would fall far below that threshold. Substantial risk of force being used against the person or property of another person is not necessarily indicated, certainly not based upon the record here. And I think a very important factor for consideration of the court with regard to 16b is the limiting phrase during the commission of the... Let me see if I can... Pardon me. I want to make sure I express that exactly. In the course of committing the offense, it is our position that this offense was completed when any portion of Mr. Gill's body entered the premises, nothing more. If I may refer to the Gardner case again, I believe it is distinguishable because the two cases the Gardner court premised its decision on, the Tenth and Fifth Circuit
that
cases.
That doesn't make it distinguishable. That's unrelated.
Those statutes are distinguishable from the Indiana statute.
But look, a court might hold X, and it holds X because it's misunderstood a case or misunderstood a statute. Well, that's still its holding. It may be vulnerable. That, you can't distinguish it on the ground that it's erroneous. That's a different argument. Okay, why don't you save your time for rebuttal.
Thank
Ms. Nadel?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Margo Nadel for the United States Attorney General. The instant petition for review should be dismissed.
So is Mr. Rahman correct that if the salesman, you know, jams his foot in the door, he's committed this Indiana crime?
No, Your Honor, because under the Indiana statute, what's required is the knowing or intentional breaking or entering.
Well, it's knowing. He knows the person doesn't want to listen to his spiel, but he sticks his foot in the door so that she can't, you know, the homeowner can't close it, and keeps on babbling about the brushes he's trying to sell. So,
well, Your Honor, even if that were something that one could be convicted of under the Indiana...
Well, is it or isn't it?
Assuming for the sake of argument that...
What's your opinion?
If one did meet all the elements of the offense,
Don't fence. I've given you all the facts. He goes up, he knocks on the door, she opens the door and says, "Oh no, not another salesman." And he says, "Wait, you've got to hear this." And he sticks his foot in the door and she says, "Go away." And he says, "I will, as soon as I finish my spiel, it takes only 5 minutes."
Yes, Your Honor. I still think that would be considered a crime under the Indiana residential entry statute.
And that's your conception of a crime of violence?
Well, Your Honor, in that case, there would be a substantial risk that...
Really?
Yes. Hmm. Yes, Your Honor. In the case
if
of somebody...
there's a substantial risk there, what crime doesn't involve a substantial risk?
Well, Your Honor, I think that... that this court determined categorically in United States versus Gardner that whatever one got...
Oh, it's a question whether Gardner is right. I mean, granted, it's recent and so on. It's probably immovable, but I don't understand it, really. Because the elements of... I mean, it sounds superficially as if it's a form of burglary, but apparently it isn't, really. It's much broader than that. Probably
not. The difference between this crime and burglary is that this crime does not have the element with intent to commit a felony therein. What is the scienter requirement of this offense under Indiana law? Because it doesn't have the burglary scienter element.
It simply requires a knowing or intentional breaking or entering into a dwelling. It doesn't have with intent to...
Well, I know it doesn't have with intent. That's what I just told you.
Yeah.
But what is the scienter element? Maybe you just don't know.
I don't know.
Because, of course, one could play this game with burglary, too. You enter a house, you get one foot in, you have an intent to commit a felony therein, and you reconsider, you see the burning bush, you turn on your heels and leave. But, of course, it's generically a crime of violence under Taylor, even if you leave as soon as you get your foot in the door.
Right, that's correct. Your Honor, I don't know what the scienter element of the crime is under Indiana law, but
well, that's kind of critical, right? Because in the salesman case, which I would think would be enough, you know that your entry is not authorized, and you intend to, you know, retain your shoe across the threshold for the duration of your spiel. That seems to satisfy the knowledge and intent requirement. See, if you do intend a burglary, if you intend a felony, of course that is dangerous because, you know, the person in the house is going to resist. But if all you're doing is being an irritating trespasser, that seems pretty attenuated crime of violence.
Well, Your Honor, I think that the inherent risk in entering somebody's dwelling unlawfully presents the potential for physical force to be used to throw that person out of the house. And that
now
it becomes...
Now, why isn't the crime of violence here the battery?
I think that the reason why the battery wasn't used is because it was a misdemeanor, so it wouldn't fall under Section 16B. And I believe this court found that battery in the state of Indiana, because it only requires a mere touching or in a rude or insolent manner, was insufficient to constitute.
And in fact, we've held specifically that Indiana battery is not a crime of violence for
exactly
that very reason.
Yes, Your Honor. That's correct.
Doesn't Indiana have a battery statute that goes beyond the just the, you know, technical tort battery?
Yep.
Yes, Your Honor.
It's aggravated a great bodily harm.
Yes, yep. And for what?
It does.
Whatever reason, he was not charged under
that one.
Yes, he was. The petitioner in the instant case was charged under the residential entry statute and the misdemeanor battery statute. But basically, this is the exact same conviction that was at issue in Gardner, and the court has already determined that exact same crime does constitute a crime of violence. And in that case...
You would think a technical battery would be much more likely to provoke violence than a salesman with a shoe in his door.
Yes, Your Honor.
So why isn't battery a crime of violence?
The court looked to the statutory terms and determined whether the crime by its nature posed a significant risk.
I don't understand the difference between it and residential entry.
Between?
If residential entry is somehow considered a crime of violence, why isn't a battery?
Well, Your Honor, perhaps the misdemeanor battery should have been considered a crime of violence,
depends
but for whatever reason, this court did not. But in that case, it was a matter
no,
of...
No, look, the statute draws this distinction. In order for the thing to be a crime of violence under B, because of potential for violence, it has to be a felony.
Yes.
It could conceivably be a crime of violence, even if a misdemeanor, under subsection A, but that requires proof depending on the elements of the offense.
Exactly.
Now, one could ask as an original matter why a distinction was drawn in the statute between a felony and a misdemeanor, but there it is. So the only way a standard battery in Indiana, which is a misdemeanor, could be a crime of violence is under 16A. 16B is not open.
Yes, that's correct.
That was, of course, the holding of Flores in this case, because yes. This crime is a felony, 16B is open.
Correct.
So that's a senseless distinction.
No, Your Honor, I don't think it's a senseless distinction.
No. It's a statutory distinction, large percentages of which are random compromises.
No. In deciding what is going to count as a crime of violence, you want to look at the entire statute. If it turns out that all sorts of violent, equally potentially violent acts are not crimes of violence because they're only misdemeanors, then doesn't Gardner stand out like a sore thumb?
Well, Your Honor, I think that the issue is that Gardner simply controls and that this court is bound by that precedent.
Well, unless we overrule it.
Indeed. However, I think that the reasoning of Gardner is...
There's no reasoning in Gardner itself, so I wonder whether you have some...
Well, I think the court reasoned in Gardner that that this crime is essentially, it's a lesser included offense of burglary, that it basically has
right.
its identical...
It is lesser. That's right. It is lesser.
Yes, but only by this one element of
the
intent to commit a crime.
But the one element is critical. It's the intent to create a felony that makes burglary so dangerous.
Well, I think that...
Because ask yourself, what are these people who enter unlawfully, but they don't intend to commit a felony? What are they doing?
I don't think that the intent...
Squatters or something?
I don't think that the intent element is relevant, because all that's at issue under Section 16B is whether or not there's a substantial risk that physical force may be used against the person or property of another.
Are there statistics on this?
Well, surely just
as... Do we know why Indiana decided to adopt this law? Were there all sorts of... Who is the law aimed at? Is it aimed at obnoxious salesmen? Squatters?
No, Your Honor.
Any spouses?
I believe that it would be that the law would be intended to prevent anybody that.
What's your basis?
I've actually been reading during this conversation. I've been busy reading Indiana cases on residential burglary, and it looks like one main reason was what happens with somebody who forms his intent to commit the felony after the entry. The guest who turns violent and won't leave was a recent conviction in Indiana. Couldn't be convicted of burglary because his intent to commit the violence was formed after the entry. And so he was convicted of this residential entry statute.
So in other words, guest comes to dinner and there's a bad storm outside. And he says, I'm afraid to go out after dinner because of the terrible storm. And the homeowner says, well, I'm very sorry, I don't want you here, get out. He refuses to leave. So that presumably is a residential entry felony. Is that what it is?
Well, he wouldn't have broken and entered. He was invited into the home. In that case, that would be distinguishable. I see I'm out of time, Your Honors.
Do you have anything further you'd like to say?
No, Your Honor, just that the government's position is that Gardner is controlling in this case and that this court has already determined that the exact crime at issue here is, in fact, a crime of violence. And
Thank you.
Please suppress the inclination to send Judge Posner's home address to the Fuller Brush Company.
I will. Thank you.
So,
remember the Hoover vacuum cleaner salesman instead.
May it please the court, just briefly.
How much time? 2 minutes.
In closing, I would like to remind the court that the creation of categorical approaches to the analysis of cases should be handled, I think, with great discretion and care. It removes flexibility and the analysis which the finder of fact may wish to bring to each case. And I think that we should look at Gardner again in terms of the precedent that it has set. And I hope that you will give due consideration to the facts and the circumstances that we brought before you today. Mm-hmm. That's all I have.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Robin and Ms. Nadel. Last case for argument is In re Crenshaw.